Hello and welcome to today's podcast. It's our pleasure today to be joined by Guy Alroy, the founder of Early Vision. Early Vision provides software solutions for the apparel industry, solutions that enable efficient workflows for mass customization and, importantly, on-demand manufacturing. Based in Israel, the team are transforming the workflow of digital production worldwide. Guy, welcome to today's podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. Guy, I think we have probably about 7 questions for you today, so we'll crack on and get through those. When was Early Vision founded and what is your vision?
So Early Vision was founded in 2019 with the vision of boosting the usage of digital textile printing. I mean, it's digital textile printing is much greener and sustainable. But to boost it, you must enable on-demand manufacturing and personalization in scale, which is missing today. So this was the vision that we focused on in the past year or so.
Okay. And what challenges does the requirement for product customization present to the manufacturer? And, you know, which marketplaces have been disrupted? What are the issues out there?
I think that the cost of on-demand manufacturing, and especially manufacturing of one-offs, is simply too high. And as a result, the adoption of these models is very low. When it is adopted, the final price to the consumer is very high. So this is this vicious cycle that this technology is not being adopted to real-life garments. In terms of challenges, you know, building an end-to-end workflow from the consumer on the e-commerce shop through the generation of the print and cut files all the way to controlling the shop floor is something that is so complicated that only the biggest enterprises could deal with. And those are rarely manufacturing on demand. So this is the type of challenges that we are helping our customers, from SMBs all the way to bigger customers to overcome. I think that while the adoption of the e-commerce and all online stores is where we started, we see now more and more interest coming from traditional brands that sells garments on demand, and they understand that moving to on demand and personalization is a must in today's atmosphere.
Okay, which marketplaces do you think are being disrupted the most within the apparel sector?
So while we saw that initially in sportswear, online e-commerce sales, and teams sportswear, we are seeing it today on other fronts, more fashion-oriented. Part of it is also because of the progress that was made in the textile digital printing itself and the ability to handle different types of fabric with a good feel. So these are mostly e-commerce-oriented, ready-to-wear type of scenarios.
Okay, and just to be clear, when we're talking about customization, we're also talking about personalization. So you've kind of got two camps there, haven't you? You've got products that are personalized and then printed, but then you also have this kind of web-to-print sector, which is all trade-orientated too, so that you have a client who can literally order online, but they can order 100 SKUs or they can order 5,000 SKUs. Your software kind of automates that whole process regardless of scale. Is that correct?
Exactly. So what the scenarios that we support today and all of our customers have these two workflows. They don't have inventories, I mean, they must distribute, they might distribute it to stores, but they are not keeping garments in inventory. Everything is manufactured on demand, and the on demand can be of predefined designs that a professional designer worked on, defined. It appears on the e-commerce shop and being offered to consumers, but also have an option for the consumer to customize the design herself, himself, through an online customizer. In both scenarios, the backend kicks off to handle the ordered garment only post the order. And it can be one off, and it can be dozens or hundreds. And the system will handle that in a very similar way.
Okay. And you're working in the direct-to-garment space, and you're also working in the roll-to-roll space. Is that right, Guy?
Right. When we started, the focus was roll-to-roll, printing before cutting. And this is the more complex workflow to handle, in my opinion.
Okay, that's good. So how are people doing it now without software and without automation? What does a traditional non-digital workflow look like?
So in the traditional workflow, there are multiple players, right? From the mill that gets instructions from the brand how to manufacture the fabric through the cut and sew vendor to the brand itself. Now, the mills will not kick off any work before they have a very clear definition of demand. And usually this translates to hundreds of thousands of meters of fabric that doesn't get used. So we need to order the fabric even before we know what will be the adoption of a given print or a given designs. So, and this is on top of that, you have the fact that on pre-printed fabric, the placement of the garment pieces, especially on complex designs, creates efficiencies in terms of fabric usage around 40 to 60% of the fabric, which is crazy. So the traditional workflow, you have the fabric before you cut, the scenario is that you must generate enough pre-printed fabric to support real life scenarios.
Yes, it's the whole thing has to completely turn around, doesn't it? Has to change completely. So we're kind of coming to a point, aren't we, I think, you know, especially in the current crisis where, you know, the digitization of the product workflow is now essential. How does Early Vision software help manufacturers then to streamline that workflow? So can you adopt a step-by-step approach, or do you have to kind of go automate the supply chain from the minute the order drops through all the way through to shipping?
So we see it's a great question. At the end of the day, we separate between the front end experience and the back end experience. We have customers that started only with the front end and customers that started only with the back end. But really, the great value comes with the adoption of both. So we are covering the workflow from the early design. We have a footprint inside of Adobe Creative Cloud as a plugin and a web browser tool as well. So the Adobe Creative Cloud extensions are meant for the professional user, and the web browser is mostly meant for the consumer, but also being used by designers in some scenarios. So that's on the front end. This is where we collect the design. And then we have the backend that can get those designs and automatically generate files that are efficiently using the fabric, where you can mix and match different designs that share the same type of fabric. So we really take it from the early design stages all the way to production. If our customer is not interested in providing personalization and they just want to go on demand, usually they will adopt the Illustrator or InDesign extensions. and generate the designs there. And then upon an order, the backend will generate the right files for the printer and for the cutter.
Great. So you're tagging it really all the way through as well, all the way through to cutting. And then is it tagged in some way so that that flows through to hemming and then onto shipping so that the data is encrypted within the file?
So that, again, an excellent question. At the end of the day, I think that the shop floor control is a very critical area. And we've learned that actually, or our customers learned it with the masks today during the COVID-19 situation. Suddenly they are manufacturing tens of thousands of units and the controlling of the shop floor became an issue. So what we are doing in those terms are, you know, every piece, every bundle of a garment is barcoded and the whole shop floor workflow is supported in a way that even if we have a defect in a single piece of a garment, it is very easy to reproduce it on demand and inject it back into the server workflow. And we see this area as an area that we will invest in the future as well.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, and especially when you get to like tiny components like a mask, you know, a personalized mask isn't very big, is it? So, you know, sending the wrong mask to the wrong person, you know, at scale is a huge issue. So by tagging, barcoding all the way through, you're just trying to remove as much human error as is possible so that we can manufacture at speed, aren't we?
Exactly. And if you do it right, the operator on the cutting machine or the person on the sewing station or in the packaging station simply doesn't care what is the target box to ship this product with. It's actually done all automatically. Labels are being generated automatically according to barcodes that follow the piece all the way through the production shop floor.
Great. And can staff then kind of log in and see where all of those components are within the workflow as well?
So this is an area that we are working on because many of our customers that came from the print industry actually don't have very sophisticated shop floor management systems, MES or MES with advanced scheduling and planning. So this is an area that we see a great need in the market.
Yeah, definitely. We all need to know exactly where everything is, don't we? Every minute. Customer service is becoming more and more and more important alongside customization, isn't it?
Yeah, and when it is one-off, the sleeve of that one-off is it cannot be found anywhere else. You need to, if there is a defect in the fabric, a defect in the print or sewing, you need to regenerate that piece again, and you want all of that to be very efficient, very automated.
Yeah, you do. You need to really keep hold of it, don't you? So we touched on this just a little bit before, Guy. How does the designer and the consumer use your software then? Because that kind of implies that the designer is obviously at the front end, the consumer is customer facing. How do they use it? What does the front end look like? And how does that then link into your web-to-print software?
So basically, if we take the professional user, as I mentioned, we provide an Adobe Creative Cloud extensions for Illustrator and for InDesign. Yeah. And basically, they use the software the same way that they used it before. We just enable it with the understanding of garments, with 3D visualization, and with the ability to package the design to be ready for nesting. For some customers, we can even do the nesting inside of the Illustrator environment through nesting in the cloud. But this is where the designer is actually defining what would be the nest, which is not that common. This is usually for smaller print houses. For the consumer, For the consumer, we provide an online customizer that has a 3D view by default, but some have asked us to enable also 2D in parallel to the 3D. And it's actually running inside of the e-commerce or the website that you go into. You see the garment, you upload images, they scale automatically to the size of the garment, and you can do the customization. And when you want to add to the cart, we capture that design and make it ready for the backend to handle.
And it just drops in automatically once it goes to the cart.
So we are providing an e-commerce integration for WooCommerce, for Shopify, and basically our plugin inside or the app inside of these environments knows to capture the design from one hand and also push the order into the shopping cart.
So it's all completely white label. The whether you're a designer or the consumer, you're oblivious to what's helping you kind of online. So for an e-commerce provider, you wouldn't actually know that it's Early Vision controlling all of that in the back end. It's totally white label. And yeah, just that, like when, I say, plug and plays into Shopify, which is, again, you know, a really great platform.
Yeah, so we have even customers that the back end is in one continent and the front end is implemented in a different continent, white label to their customer who's actually capturing the orders. So, yeah, it's tightly integrated into the environment of the e-commerce or website.
That's great. And is it totally scalable, Guy, as well then? So, you know, as you say, it's like kind of plug and play, but it can be tweaked and refined in it for bespoke installations.
Yeah. So our solution is running over Google Cloud. It's it's leveraging the scalability, the built-in scalability of the Google Cloud offering. And when it comes to a desktop product, it's really up to the customer to decide how they want to implement it. In terms of the backend, it can run in the cloud, it can run on premise. Again, in many production environments, the customers wish to have everything that production is dependent on to be on prem. But you know, I see also a few that go on demand in the cloud.
It's really interesting, isn't it? And you touched on the fact that you create a visualization within the software as well. And it's a really important point right now, isn't it, where people literally can't get out to the shops and stuff. How important do you think that 3D validation is to the sales conversion?
So I would start with saying that in my career, I worked with professional designers for many years, and it is shocking to see what type of mistakes they do when they cannot see the garment, when they see only 2D pieces. It can be scaling mistakes, it can be matching mistakes, and 3D solves all of that. But now let's think about a 12 years old girl who wants to design her own hoodie. You know, she cannot look at something that is not 3D. It needs to be 3D. It needs to look great. It needs to automate her design process. But 3D is, in my opinion, in the consumer scenario, is a must. A user maybe can do a T-shirt when he's looking at a flat design. But when you are doing a more complex garment, what we've seen with the consumers that it is really a must have.
Yeah, they have high expectations, don't they? These the new digital nomads. They, as you say, they expect to see that 3D validation, and they expect to see, it has to be a digital twin, doesn't it, of the product that's actually going to arrive to your door once it's been purchased.
Exactly.
And then it's the conversion rates go up. Yeah.
And it's interesting also to see that they might start with 3D. If you show them 2D, they simply don't know what they are looking at. But they will start with 3D, and then they might go into the 2D experience to fine-tune, but not the other way around.
Right. Yeah. It's things are changing so fast, aren't they? in what our expectations of our online experience. It's really key that we start to get this actioned, I guess. So just moving on, Guy, to the next question, let's just talk a bit deeper about production. So just to clarify, how is the software saving time, saving waste? Obviously, it's going to, cutting out both of those two factors, you're going to move to increase profits and enable not only scale of your business, but speed of producing the actual product on demand. So what do you think are the most important sectors of the software that are actually facilitating those things, saving time, waste, increasing profits, etc.?
Mm-hmm. So, let's start with the statement that all the customers that are deploying this type of technology are manufacturing only after they got the order, right? So it's on-demand manufacturing. And in an on-demand manufacturing, if you are getting tens of thousands of the same unit, you can go with a more manual workflow because you do it once and you print for, few days. But when you are going with smaller volumes, you allow consumers to order one or two items, maybe teams ordering 10 items, the handling of those little orders to a production in scale is a very manual process. What we do is we automate this process. So it really doesn't matter if you got an order of one hoodie, one sweatshirt, one legging, or tens of those. The system basically looks at the orders at predefined scheduled times and analyzes the orders to generate merged items that can be produced together. Basically, all the orders from the e-commerce site goes in. We understand according to the garment and according to the fabric and the ink, on which machine we manufacture that. We create the merging between the files and sometimes the splitting, because if you look at a hoodie, it is made usually from multiple materials, right? So we know mm-hmm. to merge and to split materials and prepare the right files at the right time. So to begin with, you don't handle an item one by one. The system does it for you, usually at night in readiness for the next morning. Of course, once we've defined what is being manufactured together, we do the automatic nesting. So if we look at traditional flows that digital textile printers are deploying, then they are handling a garment by garment. And in our system, basically, this is done automatically. We get all those items. We nest them according to the different materials, and we prepare them at night to the rip to handle. On top of that, there is the barcoding for better control on the shop floor and for handling defects and so on. That is also integrated in an automated manner into the workflow based on some definition we do with the customer. How do we follow SKUs? How do you get from the SKU to the single piece and all kind of things around these areas?
So the printers are just literally monitoring the print and pressing the button. All of the work is pre-done and they're literally just ripping over the print file and off it goes. So Guy, we've talked about the time that obviously you're going to save on the shop floor, etc., etc. Let's talk a little bit deeper about waste, wasted ink and wasted fabric. How's the software making savings in those areas?
So in the one-off type of production where you cannot nest one time and use it hundreds of times, companies usually do it manually. And when we are comparing to a manual nesting, we usually justify the cost of the system just from the fabric savings. That is from 20% to 40% compared to a manual nesting operations.
40% of fabric can be saved. That's incredible.
Yeah, depending on the scenario that the customer comes with. But usually the funny thing is that customers sometimes are negotiating with us around the cost of the product and so on, and we can work together by justifying it together just on the nesting part. Put aside the automation, put aside the enablement of the on-demand workflow and the personalization. Just the nesting returns so much of the investment that it's worthwhile to our customers.
And I guess by placement printing as well, you know, that the fabric that's no longer wasted is also, you know, it's not printed either. So you must be saving a massive amount of ink too.
Exactly. Yeah.
And of course, you know, with my sustainability head on, but that ultimately makes those fabrics easier to recycle and to reutilize, really.
Yeah, I mean, usually when you see a typical customer, you see that before they implement the software, there was still a lot of waste, and that waste went down. But still, there is some waste. And I think that globally, it's interesting to see how this will be handled. Some of my customers, I asked them, what do they do with the waste? And because nobody is coming to pick this waste, it's going to the trash like any other item, which is something that I think that we should start to look at globally.
Definitely, there's a lot of movement needed in that area as well, because of course, when we get onto the subjects of recycling, most of the waste is in the West, and the recycling's currently in the East. So the last thing we can do is start shipping things all over the world again to have it recycled. It's not going to be sustainable either. So yeah, it's how we actually utilize the waste when we do create it is a point that does need to be addressed. But of course, you know, producing less waste is the luxury and the benefit of digital technologies, isn't it? So we were talking about nearshoring. Guy, could you give us your insight into how software will be best utilized to enable companies to bring production closer to home?
Definitely. What we see is this wave of bringing back manufacturing to the west side of the world. And all of our customers, at the end of the day, manufacture, are regarded as nearshore manufacturers, either when they are manufacturing for brands or when they are manufacturing for e-com sites. The ability to create an efficient workflow to print digitally on textile and to sew on demand really is the key for near shoring. And I think that the COVID-19 waves taught us that companies that want to be capable of manufacturing even when the borders are closed must reconsider near shoring.
Yeah, they have to avert risk for the future, don't they?
Exactly.
Definitely. And I think also that the crisis has given everybody an opportunity to just stop and look at their manufacturing process too, really. And as you say, you know, start to make those improvements and take the time to adopt new technologies, which, you know, any of us that have worked in a production environment realize that when you're running at scale, sometimes it's really hard to make that decision to jump to a new technology and make that a final implication is the wrong word, but to actually make the choice to install and to train new staff. But the crisis has shown us that, you know, to be prepared is to be forearmed, isn't it, really? And to be able to adapt to any set of circumstances is what digital technologies are actually facilitating now worldwide. It's a really exciting time.
Yeah, one thing that was interesting for me to hear from a customer, they were on and off in lockdown times. And one of the things that the guy told me in Italy, he said, we are working 25 to 40% of the time. we must ensure that during this 25 to 40%, we are efficient at the most we can. So this is one of the justification for him was to get this automation to be efficient, especially in times like this, where they cannot actually manufacture 24/7.
Yeah, exactly. So you're utilizing your labor efficiently too. Very, very important. They're all fixed overheads, aren't they? It's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Guy, just before we moved on to the next question, and we dive a little deeper into some of your customers, can we just nip back a bit? Can we just have a little conversation about color? Because that's so important for in the digital frame for digital twins and everything. How does your software actually embed the color data and move that with the file to print?
At the end of the day, we are writing the workflow that the customer defines. So we are embedding inside of the templates, the profiles as defined and work best for the customer with their printer and with their RIP software. And anything that we get from either the Adobe products or from the web is basically aligning to those profiles that we define together.
Great. So it's automatically linking it for the right fabric with the right profile on the right machine.
Exactly.
That's great. Guy, I'd love to hear more about some of your customers are using your software. Can you give us a few more examples? We've just touched on it, but it'd be really nice to learn a little bit more about the scale of your customers, large and small, really, and how your software is allowing them to scale their businesses up as well and grow.
So one of the, as I mentioned before, one of the interesting things with our customers post adopting the software is that usually they start with their own e-commerce site. It's either their own owned site or a company that they're working with. But then more than, to begin with, they can scale and handle more orders. But we find many of them asking us to implement the front end also with their partners. So they are engaging with third parties, either Soho designers or brands that implement our pipeline. And basically the front end sits in one country and the back end is all done in their factory. So their ability to adopt more brands, adopt more designers in an automated manner is something that we see repeating with our customers. The other part is the ability to handle more and more types of products. Not necessarily everything is garments. So we are very focused on the garments scenario. But once the customized masks came up, of course, we aligned to that, and bags and pillows and even shoes. We see customers that are able to handle more products from more sources in a more efficient way. This is typical for the large and for the small customers.
But the masks is a great example, isn't it, of how you can develop a product at great speed and get it out to market literally in days. It's incredible.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have two examples of customers that were just getting into the lockdown situation, and we worked together on establishing on an e-commerce presence for them that allows them to sell masks and buffs and products of that nature that are needed right now, and in some countries are totally supported by the government because of the wish to leave the medical equipment to medical staff. In those cases, the ability to go online and offer something over really a couple of days was amazing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a real tribute to digital, isn't it? Really, it's great. Fantastic. But as you say, they could do that because they already had the technology in-house. Mm-hmm. So it's instant, just being able to adapt to the market trends instantaneously and move with them wherever they're going, isn't it? So that's the commercial future, I think, for so many companies. So exactly. Interesting. Guy, thank you so much for your insights. It's such an interesting conversation to actually talk to you about what's going on under the hood of e-commerce and manufacturing too, as so many people now look for solutions to the pain points that they've had over the just in focus over the last few months, really. Guy, what's next? Let's talk a little bit about the future. How is consumer behavior changing, and what technologies do we need to look out for in the near future?
So I think that all of us are seeing what the pandemic is causing and how this translates into the adoption of e-commerce. From early vision perspective, we see the trend and the need for technology support mainly in two areas of our workflow. One is the automation, the shop floor control, the ability to handle larger scales all the way through the manufacturing process. And the other one is the enablement for the designer or the consumer to create a stunning design on demand, online, very quickly and very efficiently in a scale of a designer, right? So these are areas that we are looking in terms of the near future. I think that in general, in the digital textile printing, supporting more fabrics, handling the fabric shrinkage and controlling it better, are areas that are very important for the adoption of these technologies.
Really interesting. Guy, thank you so much for all of your insights today. It's given all of us, all of our listeners, something to think about. I'll make sure that your contact details and a link to your website are in the podcast notes so that listeners can get in touch and ask you any questions, which I'm sure you're very collaborative. I'm sure you'll be happy to answer questions. Guy, thank you so much for your time today. Is there anything else you'd like to add just quickly before we finish?
No, that's perfect. Thanks for your time, Debbie. And hopefully we meet again shortly.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. And it's a pleasure to watch all of these emerging technologies start to transform our industry, really. And the COVID crisis has shown us all that we do have to adapt, and we, change. Quite often, some of us don't really want to change until it's forced upon us, but I think it has just been forced upon us, and it's a wake-up call, isn't it, to adopt manufacturing at speed and also to use these technologies to make our industry much, much more sustainable, really. It's great. Really look forward to the future. Guy, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to talk with you, and I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye.